That lasted for a while, and then we did a trio with Nate McBride, the Peter Brotz from Chicago Tentet I joined in 2005. There's been various trios, duos, quartets, yeah, all sorts. Mm.
But the most stuff we've done is the duo, I think, like the most active.
On a duo gig, so it's, I mean, that's pretty good fun, and it's quite challenging as well. And there's a lot of freedom at the same time without a bass or a third or fourth instrument.
Yeah, but the conceptions, I mean, it's not just the number of people, it's also if the group has written material, what kind of written material it is, the other people in the band. It's not just the instruments like Paul on drums or me on saxophone, but the kind of players involved. We just did a tour, two tours with electronics and what was that, March, I think? And in one case, the playing was different in both groups, even though there was electronics in both groups, because the players were different. So the chemistry is really based on the people, not just the instrument or the number of people involved. Consideration, I think, of what we did yesterday, what we want to not do again, how we might push things further. If I hear Paul doing something I recognize, maybe I go with it, or maybe I try to go against it. And since we have a lot of background together, we understand that we're listening to each other. So if I do something that seems contrary, or vice versa, if he does something that seems contrary, I respect the fact he's making a choice. It's not that he's not listening. So there's a lot of communication going on of all kinds, you know, between the backgrounds we have together, separately, what we're interested in. And when we get on stage, we really try to jump into that. And we'll be right back. Self-taught. I had a couple, you know, teachers, but it wasn't for very much time. And all the stuff that I'm really dealing with musically, I figured out myself or tried to, you know, let's say I heard Evan Parker do something and I wanted to figure out how he did it. So, or I saw Peter Brotzman play or Joe McPhee play and I was like, okay, you learn from experiencing the music, listening to the music, seeing it. So, I think you can study all this stuff for sure, but it's not really taught in schools for the most part.
My dad played drums before me. He's now a full-time painter. But initially the plan was to play trumpet, and then when I was asked what instrument I was going to play when we were doing this school band, I just said drums. So I guess there was something that, yeah.
My parents didn't run a jazz club, but my father in particular was a massive jazz fan. So when I was a kid, he would take me to concerts in Boston all the time. So I was going out and seeing shows from when I was a little kid until a teenager living at home. And in a lot of ways, it parallels what Paul saw. I mean, I saw Art Blakey all the time, Griffin all the time, people like Alan Dawson all the time. So like this foundation and, let's say, really classic, fantastic mainstream jazz. And then seeing people like Archie Shepp and more adventurous, let's say, players moving out and getting more interested in, I don't know, let's say the avant-garde music as well. So I was able to see lots and lots of music, which made me want to play.
We had a very short amount of time to play, so I guess we went on quite full-on kind of playing, aggressive. And of course, when it's limited to, what was it, 40, 45 minutes, then you kind of give everything within those 45 minutes. Let's say yesterday we had two sets, and then we could explore a wider range of musical landscapes areas. We'll be right back.
He's a massively important musician who I think is just now starting to be understood better and respected more. I mean, his trio with Paul Bley and Steve Swallow in the 60s, I think that things they were working on quite different than Cecil Taylor's, but the way they opened up the expression of time and rhythm is, for me anyway, maybe as significant. They really developed a massive amount of things under Jufri's leadership. So that trio that you're talking about, we don't play Jufri's music, but the parallel of the instrumentation with piano, bass, and clarinets, and in some ways it was a bad choice of a name for the group because everyone seems to think it's a Jimmy Jufri homage, and it's more a suggestion of that and also the idea of forward thinking, but you know, you can't help what people think. Oh, the hard rubber mouthpieces. Well, I find that the metal ones are too harsh sounding for me. So I just like the tone more, the warmer somehow. I mean, it's, every place you play is different. You have different kinds of audiences, different sized audiences. But I think that there's an international reception to the kind of music that we play, enthusiasm for it, that's in the United States or here in Hungary or anywhere, you know, in Japan too. I mean,
yeah, there's always an audience, but you always need a presenter that's willing to take the risk to put on the music.
Yeah.
And with that, if that doesn't happen, then music doesn't get to any town.
Yeah.
The smallest town. I mean, we've played at quite small places where there's either been 20 or 120, but it's always determined that there's one person or five guys that put together the show. Without them, it's impossible for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a misunderstanding about the reception of the music. You know, you say like avant-garde jazz or whatever, and immediately people are like, oh, it's going to be really strange and we're not going to understand it. But you could see from the concert tonight that people were really receptive. There was a lot of people there. They were enthused. They received what we were doing. And I think that we have to fight twice as hard to get our music heard, because there's this preconception that it's too difficult, for it's too academic or too intellectual. And I think it's a shame, because it's really music that is just for people. And it fits in society like any other kind of music that's creative. I mean, something changed, I think, in the 60s. You know, previously, jazz musicians would do versions of other jazz musicians' music, like Miles Davis doing Thelonious Monk's music, for example. And then more and more it became the composer would do their own pieces, and very rarely, if ever, would someone do it. So Eric Dolphy more or less played Eric Dolphy's music with his groups, and other people didn't really play them at the time. And I thought that there's so many amazing compositions out there that could be reinterpreted in a, let's say, a contemporary way. There was a lot of room to work that with those pieces. So that's kind of where it came from. It was like, wow, there's all this great material by Carla Bley or Dolphy or Ornette or Braxton or Sonny Rollins, Ross on Roland Kirk, etc.
Yes.
Let's deal with the music. Let's check it out and see what we can invent with it that's personal on our own, just the way Miles Davis did with Monk. Thank you. I really love working with large groups, and it started with the Peter Brotzman Chicago Tintet that Paul mentioned earlier. And initially, the group did compositions by members of the group. Now it's a total improvisation ensemble. And that was really the first chances I had to write for a large ensemble, and I was very enthused about that. And put together the Territory Band after, which Paul was involved in, and wrote for that. And the Resonance Group is the most recent opportunity I've had to write for a large ensemble. And it's unique, I think, because like the Territory Band and the Tintet, it's international. Features musicians from the States and from Europe. And it's most recently I've come up with ways to write material for a large group that you can rehearse very, very quickly because we never get any rehearsal time, but that allows the music to be modular and change a lot so that musicians really have to deal with invention all the time, which is too esoteric to get into right now. But it's a further development of writing for a large ensemble for me.
Tonight, you feel, if the audience is enthusiastic about what we're doing, of course you feel that. You feel the energy from the audience, and I mean, you feed back from that.
Mm-hmm.
And the more they give, the more you give. So for us, or for me at least, the audience, their attitude to music, their energy, it gives you a spark, a kick.
I think the energy, like Paul says, is super crucial, especially when you're on tour. You're, you know, kind of exhausted, and if you go into a room and you feel no energy there, it's twice as hard to play. And when you feel energy like tonight, it's like, okay, we're stepping and we're meeting. It's like a meeting with the audience. Like, we're all there on that occasion to have an experience. I think I agree with Peter, though, at the same time, that I don't think the audience determines my aesthetic choices, my creative choices. That's up to the musicians on the stage. Like, we are looking, we're trying to invent and create things. If the audience is there to hear us, it gives us energy to pursue that. But even if the audience isn't with us, we're going to still pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I don't think that the enthusiasm, like if I do something and I hear the audience like respond, that doesn't mean, oh, I'm onto something good, I should keep going that way. It's just like it's a interaction with the experience. But so I think it's both, really, in a sense. You know, the creativity is with the group, the energy is a mix between the group and the people in the room.
Of course, Duo will continue, but we want to do more stuff with Terry and Andy. There's a group called Lean Left. We'll meet them in a couple of days' time in Amsterdam to do a CD release concert for a CD which was recorded at the Bimhuis in Amsterdam 1.5 years ago. So hopefully we'll do more with the two of them. There's another quartet with Thomas Lynn and Johannes Bauer. There's, of course, the Tentet. In September we're going out with a nice, hopefully it will be a nice tour with Ken's Vandermark 5 and a group that I'm in called Atomic. So we'll do a double tour with the two groups, see what that brings. But I think, we'll think of new groups and we'll continue the duo. We'll play as much as possible, and not least to come to new places. I mean, we spent 4 days in Romania now, which was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice for the duo because, you know, Paul has a lot of projects that he's working on, and of course I'm not involved in, and vice versa. And we have these things that he mentioned that we work in and collaborate in that are quite different than the duo, you know. And I find that when we come back to the duo, all this other information that we picked up influences the way we move together as just the two of us. And so it always evolves. I'm always fascinated when we get together to do a tour because the music is always, for me, moving someplace new and different, and I always feel like I'm challenged. It doesn't feel like, oh, we're back to the same place again. We're always developing something. So the duo is kind of an interesting reference point. If you go back to the first recordings we've made and over the years, because it's been some time now, I find that it's really evolving. And that is the best part of being in a collaboration.
Szerencsé megölni fiatal ember.
Remélem, hogy téved.
Vigyázzon, tisztúj!
Kiküldtem? Az apám D'Artagnanon.
Mit akar?
Beállni a testőrök közé.
A becsület bajnokai.
Mértek a férfiakhoz. Az, aki meghiúsítaná a terveit, még nem született meg.
Milyen szép fehér személy.
A királyé!
A harcban nem ismernek kegyelmet.
Egy mindenkiért,
mindenkiért egyért!
Alexandre Dumas regéje alapján. A három testőr, a királynő nyakéke. Ma 16 órakor a Dunán.
Csángó Fesztivál Jászberényben. Eltiltva és elfelejtve. A 40. Tokaji írótábor eseményei. Kultikon ma az esti film után a Duna TV-n.
A Kaszás Attila díjat 2008 óta olyan színművészeknek adományozzák, akik kiemelkedő művészi teljesítményükkel, társulat és közösségépítő munkájukkal méltóak Kaszás Attila szellemi örökségéhez. Kaszás Attila díj 2012. A Dunán.